the ways that Black women are oppressed, but that it is important to synthesize that analysis with a plan of action. It is important to act because that is the only way that Black women will get free.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. And we're going to do part two of this discussion, posted online at democracynow.org. We'll be broadcasting from the Sundance Film Festival following the documentary track all week next week. Kianga Yamata Taylor, Assistant Professor of African American Studies at Princeton University, her new book, How We Get Free. I'm Amy Goodman. Happy birthday, Edith Penty. Thanks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Positively Revolting. Ani and neighborhood activist Sarah Iannarone discussed the proposed houseless shelter on Foster and the neighborhood's reaction.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Imago Theater's production of Shakespeare's The Rape of Lucrece. The play runs from January 25th through February 8th at the Imago Theater in Portland. The chamber art musical The Rape of Lucrece is an intense, intimate production featuring a combination of spoken word and song. This show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Shakespeare's The Rape of Lucrece. The play runs from January 25th through February 8th at the Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the Abbott Brothers, live in concert this July for three nights at McMenamin's Edgefield. Tickets for the Abbott Brothers are at Edgefield are on sale today at edgefieldconcerts.com.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO, Portland, your very own community radio station, and this is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. Lynn is taking a little hiatus for maybe a month or two, and meanwhile, I carry on. And boy, can I carry on. So, this morning, we are very fortunate to be talking with Sarah Iannarone.
Iannarone.
Oh my God. I practiced all morning. And I said it much better right before I got on the air. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And it is so great to have you here. We are going to be talking about neighborhood and community organizing and the compassionate response to actually getting to know our houseless neighbors and the houseless community. Yeah. Sarah is a neighborhood activist, a small business owner, many things. And I am very happy that you were able to join us this morning.
Thank you for the invitation. It's so gracious. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a big fan of KBOO and community radio in general. It's such a difficult media landscape out there. So I value community media sources.
Thank you. So we have a lot going on for people living in this area. You know that housing in Portland is at a crisis stage, that we have over 4,000 people living without permanent shelter, living houseless, and that is, by most people's estimations, an undercount. Many of those folks do not have shelter for the night, and we find people living on the streets, people dying of exposure and lack of services. And so it seems to me, anyway, to be beneficial to find ways to provide services, to provide shelter, to provide essential services to keep people alive and to help people on a road to, a more permanent solution to houselessness. And so in my neighborhood, there is a shelter that's being proposed to open late this year in the fall of 2018, and that's the Foster Road Shelter going into where there's been a grocery store. And it seems as though many neighbors are voicing the familiar concerns of, if you have a shelter, it's going to increase the houseless population. It's going to take down property values. It's a safety issue. It's going to increase drug use in the neighborhood. It's going to do all of these things. It's going to increase crime. It's going to do, and I find that to be really disheartening as a neighborhood response. And so that's why I asked Sarah to join me this morning so we can look at creating a more compassionate response to what is really a national crisis and how we can maybe make things a little bit better in Portland.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it's such an important conversation we need to be having right now because, the challenges that we face are not unique to Portland. And in fact, they're not even unique to housing, right? So many people are struggling in this city by being pushed further and further to the margins as Portland grows, whether it's your transportation choices, your housing choices, your employment choices, even your school choices, right? And oftentimes when we're trying to come up with solutions, especially from the government side, they tend to be big, they tend to be expensive, they tend to be scary. There's a lot of variables that maybe neighbors don't know about. And so often the response immediately is no. And there's a phrase that we use in the planning profession called NIMBY. And a lot of people say that when I use that, I'm insulting people. And part of that's just me being wonky and forgetting that not everyone uses the same jargon as I use. But NIMBY is this acronym that's essentially not in my backyard. But it's this notion that, and it doesn't have to be bad. I mean, you think about our Mount Hood Freeway revolt, and largely what shaped our neighborhood system is this notion of no, not in my backyard will you put a freeway. We value our neighborhoods, we value community. So it's not inherently bad, mm-hmm. but it's this notion that automatically the response is no. And I feel like we need to be moving, especially in these dynamic times, challenging times, in some ways oppressive times, when you think about the federal government and what's happening to our friends and neighbors who aren't white males. We need to have a lot more yes and how. Mm-hmm. Because if we keep saying no out of fear automatically as our response, we're leaving ourselves fewer exit strategies and fewer avenues for creating community-based solutions in cooperation with the other institutions and in cooperation with government and in cooperation with the philanthropic sector, right?
Right.
And for me, I feel like we should be leaving no ideas off the table in any of these realms. And so when I, before I ran for mayor a couple years ago, I was only theoretically engaged with this work. But by engaging with the people who wanted someone like me, a community activist, a neighborhood activist, a working class person to represent them, I actually went and was working directly with people who weren't housed. And it completely changed my understanding of how we need to address the situation. So I was pretty vehement, like, no shelters, they're inhumane, we shouldn't be warehousing people. Only tiny houses. I had this very almost boutique-y image of how our DIY solution could address the problem, right? That's a very Portland reflex. Oh, let's use our design chops and come together from the rebuilding center and we'll build everybody a bunch of tiny houses and it'll be great. Working out there with the population, what I realized is that we need everything and then some. Because what you're going to find is you're going to find people who don't even want to be indoors or can't by virtue of what they're going through in the world or have gone through in the world, right? These are veterans. These are people who are suffering PTSD. They might be substance users and abusers, or people who are dealing with mental health issues, right, for whom being in crowds may not be possible. So we need to be thinking about what are all the ways that we can meet people where they're at to ensure their safety and well-being. So even shifting the conversation around public safety, does that only include housed people? Does it only include business owners? Or should we really be focusing on the most vulnerable people when we're talking about public safety? And that's when I started to shift to say, you know, these shelters, as an interim stopping over point, are really essential and vital. And it's not just because someone is going to die of exposure one night, like we saw during that big storm. When we were very able to mobilize, we mobilized an emergency shelter at the Mount Scott Community Center for several nights with no pushback, right? Because there was this storm and people were going to be these little popsicles outside, right? So there was this, the danger was the weather, and we could save the people. But when there's no, when the danger's the people, right? That's, see, it's all how you think of it. But we, that is not what I've witnessed volunteering in shelters since. Homelessness is death by a thousand cuts,
yeah.
Right? Their hands are sore and tired and chapped, and their feet are bruised and sore, and their bodies are suffering at every level of exposure sustained. And even one night indoors for some folks is just a rest. It's an ability to take a breath. And many don't even sleep while they're in there because they are enjoying the comfort of not being outside. So they may check their email, or they may check,
yeah,
you know, those things. So anyway, I'll stop talking.
No, no. Just getting away from the elements, just having a little respite. I mean, if... you know, so this is one of the goals I have for this morning, is trying to build a little empathy and understanding, because I feel very strongly when you said meeting people where they're at, and that actually means getting to know where people are at, and that means realizing that the houseless community, folks experiencing houselessness, are not monolithic.
Yeah, no.
Right? Yeah. And I think that that is one of the major one of the major gaps that we really need to bridge in our understanding. For those of us who are housed, there is a tendency to sort of see folks who are not housed in a one-size-fits-all sort of pattern. You know, these folks are houseless because they are drunk, they're addicted, they've brought it on themselves, they've made irresponsible choices, and, you know, yeah, something should be done, but not in my backyard, right? Mm-hmm. The city should clean up the streets and get these people someplace else, you know, as if people can just disappear. That is, to me, that has always been really concerning. And I have had the experiences in my life where I have been able to get to know a lot of folks who do live on the streets, or who have lived on the streets for periods of their lives. And it is just anathema to me to think of this as a criminal sector, as a nuisance population. That is... I've heard folks in houses actually refer to the houseless as nuisance.
Oh, the nuisance factor is actually a huge part of the conversation here. And you'll hear that across the spectrum. So that's not just a kind of a bigotry statement. That's a blanket statement that we're using, is this nuisance problem, right?
Right. And I find that really offensive, frankly. I mean, we're talking about human beings who are in some need, really desperate need, of basic services. I personally think that housing is a human right, right? I think that we all deserve housing, and we all deserve food. We all deserve some medical care when we need it, and that includes mental health care. Those are I think those should be really just in the common treasury. As we live in this country, we should at least expect that very minimum. Yeah. And we deny that to hundreds of thousands of people throughout the country, right? Millions. And so this is, what are we going to do here in Portland? And as we were saying, you know, shelters not really addressing the overarching issue of houselessness, not really addressing systemic problems, but at least stopgap measures, at least something to fill a void. Mm. And we have a shelter proposed on Foster Road. And again, finding neighbors coming together to oppose that. Sarah, you have helped to organize a response, mm-hmm. Which is a rally that is tomorrow. And I want to make sure that that gets mentioned often so that can be aware of that. The More Love, Less Hate rally. Can you go ahead and give us some specifics?
Yeah, sure. So we're going to be meeting at right by where the proposed shelter is meeting. And in part, this is a response to at noon on Saturday, J20. There's a lot going on that day. We're just keeping it really tight for 2 hours from noon to two so folks can stop by and maybe go even attend another demonstration or direct action if they want, because I know it's a big day for a lot of people, although it should be a day of mourning, right? But right. The issue that I had when I went and attended a town hall that was hosted by the Joint Office on Homelessness, which includes the county and the city and some of the nonprofit partners and other supporting institutions, was often the anti-voices are so outsized. Like, it sounds like there's an awful lot of people in my neighborhood who may be opposed, but when you actually go out and do a really thorough inventory and look, that's not the case. Oftentimes it's easier to mobilize people against something, right? Because that's their uniting force, than people who are carrying on their lives and either are neutral or tacitly support it or really actively support it and don't have time to come out. So what I thought I would do is create an outlet for people who want to say, wait a minute, you know, regardless of the conversation that we need to have about the details of the shelter, there are some issues people have around it that may be very valid, right? How are we going to have a worthwhile, productive conversation about what should be happening if this vitriol is coming from every direction? And it just seems like that's this overwhelming sense, right? No shelters, it's going to be, and the rhetoric around it is so vile. Crime, think of the children, like all these things are actually kind of NIMBY, and I hate to keep going back to it, but they're kind of like, there's almost like a checklist, right? Mm-hmm. Think of the children. Oftentimes public safety is invoked, the hazards, the nuisances. It's like this fear, dun, dun, dun. You can hear like the music in the background. And I wanted to say, let's diffuse that. This is a community that's one of the few affordable places where you don't need subsidized housing to be able to afford to live, whether it's Foster, Mount Scott, Arleta, Brentwood, Darlington, out through Lentz, right out to the edge of Clackamas County. Like, it's still a very working class neighborhood. I could afford to start a business there. People can, it's not the Pearl District or South Waterfront, right? It's accessible. Like, what makes that fantastic is its accessibility. So let's focus on that and keeping it accessible for a lot of people. And also thinking about the numbers of people who are houseless in that neighborhood, if they're out of doors, it would seem to me that them being indoors, even if you didn't believe housing was a human right, and even if you did see people without houses as a nuisance, that having them indoors for the night would be safer from your perspective than having them out of doors for the night, right? So there are a lot of different ways to reframe it. So the you know, More Love, Less Hate rally on Saturday is just really to give folks from that area who support compassionate solutions to our housing crisis and homelessness situation a positive place to come together and say, we value inclusive cities. Mm-hmm. We value nonviolent communication. We value diversity and access. We value a good public process where people can disagree and have respectful dialogue without that turning to slurs and hate. So that was my thinking around it. And then, you know, people, I think, are very excited to come together for something positive.
Right on. Let's go ahead and invite listeners to call in and join this conversation this morning. This is your radio station, and this is Positively Revolting. So we want to hear from you. 503-231-8187. This morning is the number to call for our studio, 231-8187. And we have Edie on the line. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning. I thank you so much for having this topic right now. I lived in what was called Felony Flat, a few blocks from the proposed Houseless Center on Southeast 70th between Foster and Herald. For about 15 years, ending in 2010. And I still go back there frequently for visiting friends and canvassing, etc. I strongly want people to consider having this be shelter services, childcare, and therapy for children and Women X. It's right next to the YWCA. They can have a kind of a bridge over the street because people often heading west turn left to get onto Holgate and they aren't looking where they're driving. And we need to keep the automotive small business there. And it could be easy accessing going across the street to a small private school and a few blocks away to Arleta Elementary School that certainly has more room for kids. I'm also thinking that it's just down the street from Southeast Works. You could take bus 10 or 14 and then another bus or the MAX to get to the Gateway Center for people who need to file their restraining orders or get support, domestic violence and child care. I think that having this be a place for children and Women X, where their bus 14 has excellent service, the downtown services, it connects up with bus 4, they can go to North Portland, bus 10. So it's a wonderful way in which people who are children, youth, women, women identified or non-male, adults could be staying there, get support, domestic violence, get support in job skills, get housing, get community. Not only have the street level be basic services and a warm, friendly place, it's not very far from where there are several AA and other, you know, groups that support them. Upstairs could be permanent housing. And we could also have, as in Seattle, the Face the Homeless and the Block Facing Houselessness and the Block Project, where they have on every block one community member who is houseless have a teeny house supported, not just a location, but to have a community of good neighbors getting to know each other, supporting each other in those humane ways of bringing about healing for everyone, so that we're not saying not in my backyard, but since you're in my backyard and down my street anyway, let's learn from each other, let's appreciate each other, let's support each other, let's become more humane and more empowered through our kindness.
Thank you very much, Edie. I think that pretty much hits the nail on the head for me. How can we get to know each other? How can we support each other? We're all struggling with something.
Because there are hundreds of people, men, who have been located by the state in that neighborhood as sex offenders. So on one hand, the danger to my concern is not about houseless men or houseless other people being a danger to us tenants and homeowners. My concern is that we have to keep those that the state has forced in that neighborhood served and supervised and supported, and mostly protect those houseless women and children who are far more risk if they don't have a shelter and a home and a community supporting them.
All right. Thanks very much, Edie. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Sarah, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think this notion, you know, that it's funny she raised that point, Felony Flats. One of the first op-ed pieces I ever wrote to the Tribune, like probably back in 2009 or 2010, was, can you please stop calling our neighborhood Felony Flats? It's a very diverse, vibrant, wonderful place to live. And I think even that notion, you know, of poor work, I think one of the big issues that people have is that poor working class neighborhoods should be the repository, if you will, for the quote unquote undesirables. Right? And so they say, well, why isn't this happening in the Tonier neighborhoods? And I actually think that's a valid concern. Mm-hmm. I really think that this should be a community-wide effort where these, perhaps not even of the scale or intensity, but where, you know, whether or not it's nonprofit organizations or community organizations working together to shelter people temporarily or in transition, that they're pretty evenly distributed around the city, mm-hmm. Would be an equitable approach. Now, not everyone feels comfortable in those places. Right. So, again, right. We have to think not about our feelings, but the feelings and the needs of the users. But I think that point that she's talking about is really valid. Let's make sure that we're focused on the health and well-being of the people who are experiencing houselessness, and maybe the housed people having a little bit higher level of privilege and security. So maybe we can put their needs second in the short term.
Absolutely. All right. 503-231-8187. This is KABU, Positively Revolting. I'm Ani, and I am speaking this morning with Sarah Iannarone.
It's so
again,
hard.
Pronounced it fine before I got the mic on. I practiced, and I'll practice more, I promise. So I also want to let folks know, coming up on KABU this morning, 9 o'clock, Veterans Voice with Northwest Vets for Peace. They are dealing with the after effects of war. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views has practical and affordable energy-saving techniques that will help reduce your carbon footprint. And at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Finishing up the radio zine this morning at 11 o'clock is a look through the history of feminism, from the suffrage movement to the blues legacies of black feminism. KABU is your independent source for news and entertainment. You can become a member if you haven't done so already. You can just go to kboo.fm and click donate. I also want to point out that we are celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. We are the oldest community radio station independently owned and operated in the country. And that means that tomorrow is the grand opening of our Oregon Historical Society exhibit. So I hope folks can join us at the Oregon Historical Society tomorrow as we celebrate 50 years of KABU. That's 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock, the hours of the Oregon Historical Society downtown on 1200 Southwest Park. That's Park and Jefferson. All of that said, let's go ahead and talk to our next caller. Good morning, Sean. You are on the air.
Good morning.
Morning, Sean.
It goes without saying, I support the shelters. I support day sites. I was living in the Chicago area and became homeless for about 2 months, and I had to rely heavily on day sites and shelters in order to survive. But the reason I'm calling this morning is I was wondering if there's any pressure building for an increase in inpatient psychiatric care. Our jails and prisons have become the de facto psychiatric hospitals, and with this incredible explosion in homelessness, I'm curious to know if there's an increasing cry for long-term inpatient psychiatric care. No one, of course, wants to go back to the bad old days, but it seems like we really threw the baby out with the bathwater, and we really have this incredible need for good, high-quality inpatient psychiatric care, and I'm just hoping there's some pressure building for that. If you had any comments, thanks.
Thanks very much, Sean.
That's such a good point. I mean, really, when you talk about these shelters and all these solutions, we're just thumbing the dike, right? And so this point that you bring up is so vital, because, you know, there are some people experiencing houselessness who are what I would call, you know, refugees from a very brutal economic system. But many, many people are experiencing mental health issues and the deinstitutionalization, you know, that started in the 1980s.
That was under Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah. We are reaping what we sow right now. So
yeah, that really did. You know, as I was in my very early teens when Reagan took office, and had actually started volunteering at Bologna Joe's. It was my first volunteer gig in this world when I was 14, working at the day shelter. And it was located at the east end of the Burnside Bridge, where there's now a couple of high-rises that are extraordinarily expensive. And that day shelter had really kind of opened my eyes to who were houseless in Portland at that time. And at that time, they tended to be older men, tended to be vets, not families. You know, it was pretty, there were some families, but it was pretty rare. And then the deinstitutionalization happened under Reagan. And we saw the houseless population change within months. Yeah. And then as housing crisis, you know, grew, we've seen that population continue to change until now. We have many families, many children living on the streets. And certainly, issue of need for mental health care, whether inpatient or just solid services, somebody to check in with, somebody to actually make sure you are on appropriate treatment plans, whatever that might be for you, is so missing.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the level, the intensity of care. I'm close with one woman, I guess I would call it transitioning out of houselessness right now. She's gone from being on the streets to in a tiny home community to in what I would call transitional housing, looking for permanent housing. And the level of service that, helps stabilize her so that she can have a good quality of life is quite intense. I don't think many people realize that. I mean, some of us are caregivers, by default or just kind of by more, traditional family mm-hmm. circumstances, if you will. But there's a lot of caregiving that we can be doing as a community to ensure that folks are getting things where I would say our social safety net has grown quite threadbare at the federal level. And frankly, municipalities and counties are struggling to keep up. These are things that our federal government used to actually help provide. And we don't necessarily have the resources here
right.
to do that on our own. So we have to come up with some interesting partnerships and new solutions and ways of paying for some of this stuff, which is taxing, to say the least.
Absolutely. And yet, so very necessary. I also, I have to just go ahead and put out one of my pet peeves. It seems like one of those obvious things, a very obvious need that the city, the county, neighbors need to put our heads together to solve, and that is public restrooms.
Oh my goodness, I have this, if you spent any time at the tiny house villages, Hazelnut Grove, for instance, I've gone and volunteered there a bunch. I like to play dominoes with the guy who used to be the mayor there. He's in permanent housing now. But they still portage their water from Overlook Park via shopping cart, via 5-gallon water jug, yeah. via shopping cart, right? And right. I'm thinking to myself, this is two dozen transitional housing beds, very low cost to us as a municipality. How is it that we are not doing water service there?
Right.
Right. Basic things like sanitation, waste. You hear neighbors all the time, oh, the trash. Oh, garbage trucks are going around the city all the time. We could have whole cleanup crews. That could be a good use of money and way to put people who weren't skilled workers to work, right, doing cleanup. There's showers. Right. Mobile shower services that can be on a schedule and just roaming the city. So if you needed a shower, dental care, health care, clinics, all these things could be mobile. If we can have all these things in food trucks, right? Why can't we have them for people who need services? To me, that just seems like a no-brainer. So
yeah.
I'm with you on that one. Bathrooms. Yeah, it's just.
I mean, it's hard enough when you have a house, if you just happen to be out and about doing things and such, needing a restroom. Well, you can usually slip into a business and you can usually use a restroom if you look right.
I was going to say, if you look like me, I can walk into the Heathman. I mean, I have all the best bathrooms in the city mapped out, but I'm dressed like a, downtown professional. I can slip into the fanciest places and use the restroom
exactly.
whenever I want. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But for folks who are living on the street, yeah, that's harder, right?
Yeah.
And I notice more and more bathrooms being locked. You have to go and ask for a key. You have to do this and that. And you have to have ordered first. You have to, all of these
yeah.
things. And to me, just providing, a place to go to the bathroom is essential. I mean, that is just, gotta say, in this neighborhood, in the Buckman neighborhood, where KBOO is located 15 years ago or so, I was working on the neighborhood council, and that was one of the major complaints of the neighbors was, people are just relieving themselves everywhere. They're using my yard. We can't have this, so the homeless have to go someplace
yeah.
else. And I thought at the time, well, of course people are going to have to relieve themselves someplace, right? Why not actually have public restrooms? And thank goodness for the last year or two, there's been the Portland Loos that are located at St. Francis.
They're few and far between.
But they are extremely few and far between. And to have, two loos for the Buckman population is inadequate.
Well, and think of it this way. I always use the example of the ADA sidewalks, right? Mm-hmm. When you do a curb cut and you put in a nice little ramp, well, that doesn't just help people with physical disabilities. It helps people with shopping carts, bicycles, moms with baby strollers. Tourism is one of our fastest growing industries here. I mean, there are a lot of people who need restrooms, not just people without houses, right? So if we build really nice self-cleaning restrooms citywide, that's good for tourism. It's good for commerce. It also is good for people who don't happen to be living indoors.
It's very holistic of you. That's great.
Well, but that's how we need to be looking at these things. I mean, why should some people have access to quote-unquote livability, right? When really what makes a city livable are the things that make it livable for all of us. Safe sidewalks on which to walk, right? There's not just one group of people who value good sidewalks. There's not just one group of people who value access to drinking water, hence the Benson Bubblers. We all benefit from that. So I think thinking of it in terms of that we all benefit is a good way to start looking at some of these solutions as opposed to seeing them as such a, you know, a drag on our society.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and talk to Jeffrey. If you want to join in that conversation again, the number is 503-231-8187. Good morning, Jeffrey. You are on the air.
Hello, KBOO 90.7, KBOO, and our community values, point. Like Sister the Rose, the people of the street, we was downtown off of Burnside. And like when they build all these condominiums and condos, like the Pearl District, like you said, up Burnside, Cross Burnside, up by Porsche, like you said, they had these loos and stuff like that. Sometimes you got to go to Multnomah Library or Subway or something like that, or get their code number to go. But they got to, importantly, got to step up to the plate. Who going to run our regulations? Who going to run our America like that so people could get access, help more, living on the street, homeless, like Sister the Rose? I don't know where. How about humanity? People get functions to help build them up so they can get transport, housing, or some kind of place where they can get off the street. Because I know it's a nuisance when you can't use the bathroom, everything's closed up. Then the law enforcement who working with our government, with our regular legislator, because I know a bounce going to be coming up here pretty soon as well, too. Yeah. And I hope that can step up to the plate. Just don't sweep that underneath the cart, because everybody got to get turned equal opportunities too, when people, especially the health care, the one-on-one on our balance, because that's very important too for us. Because then if they turn the health premium, then somebody gets sick or something, because all the stuff that you hear in the news and our public and our reporters, because that is a big issue. So somebody who could step up to the plate, and Sister Rose, that's a temporary thing near though, but still, when they all go and clear all out, and they got it cold and it's raining, and you got to go somewhere, so many homeless things, well, something's wrong with there. Either they're not looking for us or don't care too much about everything else besides them and the greedy, like people can't live cost of living anymore. I guess the rich is getting rich in the middle class, because that's why the town is booming. Up by OE on Broadway, up on Burnside, up by where you're stationed. Mm-hmm. They're building all stuff over there.
Yeah.
But why they can't, like that old place down there on Stark, where that old furniture shop used to be, how come they can't make a place out of there or something? Fix that up. They can make, like, places condominium and it's cost to man to live anywhere. So something's wrong with that picture. Either they gotta step up to the plate and look at it the opposite this way from my legislature and from my government.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Right, and thank you for your passionate shout out for Yes on Measure 101. I'm supporting Measure 101 too, so I wanted to thank you for putting that
amplify
plug in there.
Amplify that a little bit. Yeah.
Signal boost, Yes on 101, everybody. And turn in your ballots. It's too late to mail them, so you have to drop them off.
You have to actually drop them off. It's true. Basic human services, like I was saying, we need health care. We need shelter. We need good options for people to just live their lives, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciate your phrasing earlier that we are looking at economic refugees. We are also looking at refugees for a lack of health services, including mental health services. It's so important. I want to not sort of push a stereotype that people are on the streets because they are mentally ill. But I do, and I actually, once you are living on the streets, the stress of that can help to create mental health issues for people, or does create mental health issues for a lot of folks. And so there's a little cart and horse thing, too, that goes on. But we need those services, and everyone needs to be able to have access.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's such a valuable point. And one of the, I guess, stories that I like to think of, or scenarios that I like to build, is, you know, there's that Atlantic article where what happens if the big one comes, right? The big earthquake comes in Portland. And 50 to 70,000 people could be homeless overnight in Portland from a range of class backgrounds and geographies here. And what will we do?
Yeah.
What's the plan? Where will everyone get their water? Where will we be sleeping at night? Where will we be going to the bathroom? Some of the stuff we could be testing out now. What does it mean for us to take corners of certain public areas and turn them into... I love the idea from, you know, R2-D2 of rest stops, right? Yeah. We have them on highways. So we think motorists are entitled. You know, motorists on interstates are entitled to stopover. Shouldn't we have stopover places? I mean, we have them at festivals when we open Tom McCall Waterfront Park. So shouldn't we be able to actually create stopovers for many, many people?
That is an excellent point. Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and talk to, let's see, who do we have here? Martin. Good morning, Martin. You're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I've been listening to the program, and I kind of get the idea that there's going to be a rally for the homeless and for housing somewhere, but I don't know where it is and when it's going to take place. I was just wondering about those.
I was just about to get to the repeating of that information. Sarah, tomorrow there is a get-together, a rally happening. Go ahead and give those details again.
Yeah, so we're thinking in terms of, you know, more love, less hate. And we're going to gather at 62nd and Foster Road, which is right where Holgate and Foster Road cross, for 2 hours between noon and 2 p.m. tomorrow, which is Saturday, January 20th. That's easily accessible by the 14 bus, which is the Hawthorne bus, the 17 bus, which is the Holgate bus. And we'll be gathering there just with signs that are very positive. We're encouraging people to dress in bright colors, be joyful. We're just trying to spread this message of, let's have positive community conversations about how we can come up with more compassionate solutions for the people who are experiencing our housing crisis and experiencing homelessness right now in our city.
Did you say 12th and Foster?
No, 62nd and Foster. So right where Holgate and Foster cross.
Excuse me, 62nd and Foster.
Yep.
Okay, this must be my old age. Well, I would definitely try to be there and in support of that situation.
Oh, please join,
As I see, I have never seen, and I've lived in L.A. and San Francisco for a while, and I've never seen so many people on the streets in my life. And I think something positive should be done about that.
All right. That's wonderful, Martin.
Martin, thank you very much for your call. And I know that there's also been a caller who... just left a message that they wanted information on Women's March this weekend. The march I know about, and I know that there are really dozens of actions this weekend, but I know about a march on Sunday, the Indigenous Women's March, honoring Red Fawn and Indigenous women warriors. Everyone invited, please join. So that is Sunday. 1 o'clock is the gathering time at Terry Shrunk Plaza. So 1 to 4 on Sunday. There is a Facebook event page. It's the Indigenous Women's March, and women spelled with an X instead of an E. And I've had 3,000 people ask me how you pronounce that. And I think Edie probably was doing that, Women X.
Oh, that's good. You know, I've wondered about that too.
Yeah. And I have to say, I've always said, I don't know, I just say women with an X. I you know, I'm old enough that I remember Women with a Y. That was also interesting.
Retrofitting the patriarchy is hard.
It is, isn't it?
Wouldn't it have been easier if we could just start from scratch?
I'm stealing that line. So that is January 21st. It's Sunday, 1 to 4, Terry Schrunk Plaza. All right. And I will actually post that information to the Positively Revolting Facebook page. And I want to encourage you to like Positively Revolting on Facebook so you can keep up with information like this all week long. Once a week is never enough. And also on Twitter, you can find us at Positive Revolt. So with all of that said, I want to also just give that phone number one more time. And that is 503-231-8187.
Ani, I just wanted to announce one other thing while you're kind of having people with their calendars out,
yes.
Right? While you're putting things in your calendar, I want folks to put this one in. There's a meeting at Multnomah County, so where they're going to be discussing whether or not they should sign a lease for this building, and that's going to be an important meeting for people to come out to and support and say that they support solutions like this, and that's Thursday, January 25th at 9:30 a.m. at Multnomah County, which is 6th and Hawthorne, right on the east side of the Hawthorne Bridge there, and that's a council meeting. People who don't feel comfortable testifying don't have to, but bodies there that say, yes, we support getting our unhoused neighbors indoors for the night. A good turnout for that would be very helpful. So that's Thursday, January 25th at 9:30 a.m. at Multnomah County building at 6th and Hawthorne.
So that's 9:30 this coming Thursday. All right. So, Sarah, you know, one of the things, we were talking before we got on the mic about how it's important to just have these conversations and to sort of just do a little spreading of compassion. And to me, the thing that I have noticed makes a huge difference in my life and in the lives of many of my friends is actually talking to folks who are out on the streets, who are houseless, and getting to know them as our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Right around KABU, there are many people living on the street.
Yeah.
And I always find it very concerning when I see the deputies, the sheriff trucks, the Portland police, moving people along, throwing out all of the possessions. I'm sorry, taking them into some sort of central warehouse where I have heard from many folks it's hard to get them back.
Yeah, the sweeps are very inhumane and not a solution to anything.
Right. Yeah. It just sort of adds another layer of stress to people who are already stressed to the max.
Yeah.
It provides no solution.
Yeah.
It is one of, I think, you know, it's a human rights violation, but that's my personal take on it. Getting to know folks that live in the area. My housemate and I were walking to my car a couple weeks back and happened to be parked next to somebody's tent who was out sort of stretching and looking up and you know, just being. And my housemate looks at him and says, "Dude, do you like sunflower seeds? Because I got this big bag of sunflower seeds." And the guy was like, "I love sunflower. Yeah, they're my favorite." It's like, oh, here, you know. And we exchanged information. We exchanged humanity for just a moment. He's our neighbor. You know, this man lives on the street a block from the station. He's there mm-hmm. all the time. You know, taking a moment to stop and interact and getting to know him as a human being is absolutely worthwhile. It changes perspectives from, this is a scary situation. This, who knows what this guy is up to? What? Why is he there? What could he be doing? I can't walk down that sidewalk now. I might have to. Oh yeah, he's a neighbor, right? He likes sunflower seeds. I like sunflower seeds. We got something in common, you know. To me, that makes a huge difference. And as I was talking about my my teens of getting to know folks using a day center. I've kept that, ability to connect with people, whether they're housed or not. And I have noticed that I have a lot less fear because
yeah.
I realize these are folks just like folks with houses, right?
Well, shouldn't we be doing that for everyone, though? I
right.
mean, for me, that's what the inclusive city and the accessible and
yeah.
the equitable city is all about. When we have vibrant, mixed income, mixed age, mixed ethnicity neighborhoods, then the person who doesn't look like you doesn't represent fear. They represent just someone you haven't met yet. So whether they're unhoused or speaking a different language, or, I mean, I tend to do that even with people who seem like maybe they have more power and access than I do, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to offer the mayor a few more bags of sunflower seeds too. No joke. We need to be building bridges in these critical times. And that can be hard. We're not doing things, I don't think, that cultivate that always. We spend a lot of time on social media. I know I do. We spend a lot of time indoors. People spend a lot of time inside their automobiles. So I think it's just about that first courage. Because like you know, once you've volunteered, then it becomes effortless.
Right.
I'm like, hey, neighbor, it doesn't quite matter who you are. I know I might even disagree with you if we started talking politics. So we're just going to talk rose bushes.
Right.
And leave it at that. And make those connections, because every single connection will make us all stronger.
Absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I've also seen, you know, the opposite of that, the people who want to barricade themselves, who are very afraid. And I think that's sad. I think that we're missing so much of our humanity when we choose to see the other as enemy, as threat. And that's something I want to spend a little more time talking to people about. You know, when we build bridges, we come together, we're stronger. And I think that is just so essential to getting through the times that we are in. We are in very perilous times, climate-wise, natural disaster preparedness-wise. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at threats of nuclear war again. You know, everything old is new again.
Even the economy and things like automation, we're going to have to come together to come up with some really creative solutions for things that we've not dealt with before. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of different brain power, not just one kind of brain power.
Absolutely. Yeah, building bridges is essential.
Yeah.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We got about 7 minutes left, so if you've got a question or a comment, this is the time to call on in. And in the meantime, I want to make sure folks know about the action again tomorrow. Sarah is a community organizer, and we have her on this morning to talk about what is happening tomorrow at noon.
Tomorrow at noon, there's a More Love, Less Hate. We could call it a Building Bridges rally. It's exactly,
I like More Love, Less Hate.
More Love, Less Hate. It's exactly that. It's, can we get a bunch of people together and let's make some connections in a really positive way and say we're going to all work together and come up with some creative solutions and some compassionate solutions for our housing and homelessness crisis in the city.
I think that's fabulous. I think that, you know, one thing, I have lived in the Foster Arleta neighborhood for 13 years now. And that neighborhood has changed significantly in the last 13 years. I think all Portland neighborhoods have changed pretty significantly in the last 13 years. But one of the things I've noticed is when I first moved there, I didn't see people sleeping in doorways. Now I do. Yeah. It's pretty common.
Yeah.
And so, again, to read comments from public meetings held in December saying that these, you know, having a shelter where there is a empty, vacant business, had been a grocery store for years, that having a shelter there will encourage houselessness, will encourage houseless folks to be in our neighborhood. It kind of blows my mind. I'm thinking, well, actually, houseless folks are in our neighborhood. Houseless folks are already there.
Mm-hmm.
This was a thing I heard often in the Buckman neighborhood, that we have to close St. Francis because it just encourages houselessness.
There's the attractor myth, and it actually goes across all sectors. There's the myth that if you as a city are too compassionate toward homeless people, then you'll start attracting people from around the country, right? Like somehow that there's this population, right, roaming, looking for the perfect way to exist as homeless is quite ludicrous. But that's why I try
I call it
the attraction myth, right? I think really just mythologizing some of these assumptions that people have based on lack of exposure, lack of education, right, or even lack of critical thinking,
Huge on the lack of critical thinking. Services cause homelessness?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that, don't you think, I mean, so that we can start to just really, but then also not engage with that. Because I think surmount that. Well, so what? I mean, so what? Now what? Like, that's where this notion of yes and becomes so important. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say your premise is true. Let's say this assumption that you're not going to change, that your property value is going to go down, right, because there's a homeless shelter here, which I fundamentally disagree with. But mm-hmm. Show me the data is what I always say. But what? Okay, so what? What do we need to do now? That would be a much better way to approach a complex conversation than just saying no. Mm-hmm. I'm completely opposed to this. And so I want us to get a little bit better at talking about this.
Excellent. And we all need a little more practice in talking about this. So let's go ahead and talk to Harry. Good morning, Harry. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
And I noticed that here in Portland, we only have two tent cities. And I was hoping maybe we need more tent cities built around instead of homeless shelters, maybe some more tent cities.
All right.
Yeah. First
Seattle
of all,
has eight of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's when I say that I think we need belt and suspenders and all that and meet people where they're at. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, when we talk about creating community or creating villages, if you were, villages of tents is not out of the question, I don't think, especially if you have the proper infrastructure, which would be sanitation, right? Water, waste management, all the basic things, and public safety, mm-hmm. right? So that people feel safe and secure. I don't think that's off the table, frankly. I think we need to be getting people out of the elements. That's a really compassionate solution for people who may be on a cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the two tent cities we have in Portland, they have a 30-day waiting period. So, you know, and I think the government, the Multnomah County and the city should build more of them.
Or maybe just get out of the way and let communities build. I mean, for me, one of the biggest things is maybe a lot more DIY and a lot less red tape would be a way that I would like to approach this. So, say, for instance, in my community, if there were a bunch of people and there was a vacant lot and we wanted to, say, host 10 tents and we're willing to staff that and the city was willing to provide water, electricity, and sanitation, well, then by all means, I think that's probably a lot less than however many millions of dollars that we're going to spend on a big shelter, right? So I think that's the kind of way that we should be. You and I mentioned this earlier, mm-hmm. this DIY community problem-solving approach where you just set these basic parameters and then say, just like Dignity Village, right?
And those would be much less expensive,
oh,
not only
goodness.
Than the shelter, but then the criminalization factor. Because, you know, I think it was Salt Lake City that did the experiment of actually providing small, standing room only apartments for folks who had been on the streets. And that was, in fact, far less costly than the criminalization process of moving people along and occasionally jailing them and all of these other, you know, sort of measures that are inhumane and don't work.
And if we were volunteering
with
houseless people, our knowledge of them and their experiences and understanding what they're facing in the world would grow and the empathy would grow and then our ability to devise compassionate solutions would grow because we would have a better sense of what the actual needs were as opposed to superimposing what people who've never experienced houselessness trying to solve it think houseless people need, right?
Absolutely.
I hear that a lot from the people who are houseless.
Yeah, huge. That is a huge point. Thank you very much, Harry, for your call this morning.
Thank you for taking my
call. That's a great idea, Harry. Write a letter to the mayor.
We've got one more person that we can try to squeeze in here. You've got about 1 minute. Tim, you are on the air. Good morning, Tim. All right. Well, it was going to have to be fast anyway. And there it is. Sorry, Tim. Better luck next week. let's just go ahead and wrap up with that information again. Obviously, this is a long-term issue, and it's nationwide. In fact, it's pretty much global. But, you know, let's starting in our own backyard, starting in Portland. This is what we've been talking about this morning, compassionate, just having compassion for houseless neighbors. And the action tomorrow again, Sarah?
So we're having a rally, more love, less hate. So let's start using some kinder language and come up with some compassionate solutions for folks who are experiencing homelessness. And we're going to be meeting at 62nd and Foster Road, which is where Foster and Holgate cross in Southeast Portland, at noon tomorrow, from noon to 2, Saturday, January 20th. And yeah, just come brightly dressed, have some signs with some welcoming messages if you like, or just bring your body or bring your friends. And we'll stand there for 2 hours in solidarity, learn some new names, meet some new faces, and put them in our mental databases as people that we have in our community, and we can work together on some of these things with.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us this morning. Hope to talk to you again sometime soon. We can check in a little while later. And thank you all for joining us this morning on KBOO. Coming up right away is Veterans Voice, and that's the Northwest Vets for Peace dealing with the after effects of war. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. And you are listening to KBOO. We are turning 50. Join us tomorrow, maybe after the More Love, Less Hate rally, because the Oregon Historical Society is open till 5, and it's the kickoff date for our exhibit, 50 Years of KBOO. Thank you for joining us, and I'll be back next week. You have been listening to Positively Revolting. Stay tuned.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The High Captain, a play showing Thursday, January 18th through Sunday, January 21st at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Part of the Fertile Ground Festival, The High Captain play follows several shipwrecked petroleum barge workers in their attempt to set up a government on their new island home, a task complicated by the fact that they have been huffing their ship's cargo. The play provides a uniquely cathartic opportunity to come laugh, cry, and gain some perspective in the times we live in. Again, that's The High Captain, a play showing Thursday, January 18th through Sunday, January 21st at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.